This week's sponsor of the Fastest Known podcast is VJ Shoes. Founded in Finland, VJ has been making performance outdoor running shoes for over 40 years, and now they're finally available in North America. With the best grip on the planet, VJ Shoes have helped the world's best trail runners, sky runners, participants in orienteering, and even obstacle course racers achieve their dreams and win world championships. We'll hear from some of those athletes on the Fastest Known podcast in the coming weeks. Listeners can get $40 off of VJ Shoes by going to vjshoesusa.com/FKT and entering code FKT40 at checkout. Thanks for the support, VJ.
I am in sunny California right now talking to a gentleman you may or may not have heard of, but you really should. This person set the FKT in the John Muir Trail and is a two-time Barkley finisher. I am speaking with
Brett Mountie. live in Redwood City. I'm a risk manager at Farmers Business Network and have a wife and two kids.
Brett Mountie, we're sitting here. I haven't seen you in years. You look fantastic. What's it been, like 8 years since we saw each other last time?
It seems like it's been about that long. Yeah, it's been a long time.
But you look fantastic.
Thanks, Buzz.
You bet. Well, it's a great story, Brett, because you're an amazing endurance athlete. Peter Backwin and I, we went up Long's Peak. We did the Keener's route on Long's Peak that time.
And yeah, that was
fun. Like, here comes this guy from California. Who knows what cred he's got? And you just strolled right up. Low fifth class solo route.
Yeah, that was an awesome route. I remember that. The Keener's route is an amazing route to do.
Yeah, but I think you came under the radar with the JMT, and it was an interesting story because you just blew it out of the water, and no one had ever heard of you. Before you, it was all ultra runners with some credibility, some background, and who is Brett Mountie? Literally no one had heard of you, and some people did not believe the time you did it in. And Peter took your photos, looked at the time stamps on it, and verified it that way. And then it wasn't later till people met you and said, wow, this guy is the real deal.
Yeah, that's right. Some people did not believe it. I think it took the Barkley to convince some of the holdouts.
Well, all of a sudden, you show up at Barkley Marathons and you become a finisher. So that's, you couldn't fake that one.
No. No, you have to show the scars from that.
Show the scars. Indeed, that was the next year. You finished 2 years. The next year was when Jared Campbell made his appearance on the scene. Mm-hmm. And I think you did 4 laps together that year.
Yeah, that's right. We did. Yeah. At which point you are forced to split up and go the separate ways on the last loop. That's right. Yeah.
So going back again, my recollection of the JMT is you had that uber methodical style. Let's just talk about style here, because you said you're a risk manager, but you're a high-end scientist, I believe.
Yeah, in my former life, I was a scientist.
Oh, you're not now.
Well, right now I'm a risk manager now.
Oh.
But I've done a mixture of both financial and jobs, as well as scientific research.
Gotcha.
Based.
Well, when you told Peter and I the type of research you were doing, only he understood it. I mean, I couldn't even understand what you were doing. So you were a very high-end scientist.
Oh yeah. I was doing physics research for many years. Mm-hmm. And definitely during the Barkley and JMT years. Finance has only been more recent.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you have two kids, you gotta make a little money.
Yeah, they're expensive.
But that really ties in with the JMT, if I may. A lot of ultra runners, right? If you have a comment on this, maybe you do, maybe you don't, but I notice that ultra runners tend to go in these things with a fair amount of confidence due to their running background, and they flail. They're not they lack methodical nature. They lose chunks of time, even if they're very fast runners. Mm-hmm. Well, you took that approach, you're not a through hiker, but you took that very scientific approach of minimizing time loss.
That's right. And just stepping back a second for the confidence aspect, I didn't have any ultra running experience going into the GMT, but in many ways I would say that was an advantage because I didn't know what I was getting myself into, and so I had no idea that it was going to be as hard as it was, and so I just looked at the time. You know, the average speed was something around 3 miles an hour, and to me it's like at the time I was doing a lot of long day hikes, like 30-mile day hikes and that sort of thing, and it's like, you know, I could walk 3 miles an hour forever. Like, how hard can this be?
Interesting.
So I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
Oh.
But you're right though, Buzz. I obsessively focused on how to minimize time loss. You know, minimize, you know, the time it takes to get water, to eat. You know, I was moving as much as I possibly could.
Relentless forward motion.
That's right.
Well, thank you for bringing that back. And this is a theme of the Fastest Known podcast, is that relentless forward motion, the tortoise versus the hare. And if I recall, Brent, you told me back then that you practiced filling water bottles and drinking water bottles and putting them away.
That's right.
Now,
yeah.
Listeners should hear this.
Yeah.
This is real.
Well, yeah, because throughout the course of the full JMT, you're probably doing that, you know, I don't know anymore, like 30, 50 times or so. And so if you waste a minute doing that, that can be a half an hour to an hour.
Right.
So, everything you do adds up over the span of 3 days.
There you go. I think this is good. This is good info. It's a good attitude that for the multi-day efforts, I think ultra runners would do well to heed. But then you get into Barkley. That's different. I mean, you have to be tough, fit, and extremely determined.
Yeah. 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 I mean, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, as far as the preparation going into that, the first year, I did my research as best I could on the course. You know, I looked at the topo maps and, you know, memorized it as much as I could, you know, to develop like an internal, you know, map within, you know, one's mind.
Wow.
And then, of course, the, you know, the physical preparation for it. I mean, that's, you know, that's critical. I mean, you have to be able to do the gain.
Well, how did you prepare for that living in California?
I did a lot of short hill repeats. Basically, I mean, you have to make do with what is accessible, and I think the largest hill I had at that time was about 500 feet. So I did all my hill repeats on either a 500 foot hill or a 300 foot hill, I think, which, I mean, it's a lot of repeats, especially when you get down at 300 or even 200 feet.
Well, how many?
For doing that like 4 hours at a time.
Oh, just 4 hours.
Yeah. Like say you're doing, my standard workout, I would have built up to like 12,000 feet of gain.
In one day.
In like 4 hours.
4 hours, yeah. Okay.
And you know, so, you know, I mean, however many laps that works out to be, it's a lot. Like 40 laps is what I remember on the 300 foot hill.
Okay.
So just doing that, several times a week.
Well, Jared did Grandeur. Which is much bigger. You got to do the a few thousand foot gain per lap.
Yeah.
But John Kelly, the last person to finish Barkley, told me he did it on a treadmill in the basement.
But then how does he do the descent? Because I mean, you need to. I mean, I've gone through this so many times where, I mean, I like running on an inclined treadmill. I mean, it's efficient and it's easy on the body, but then if, you know, the quads just need to be acclimated for the descent. And, you know, if you if you don't prepare for that, then it's pretty brutal.
That's a good question, which I did not ask him.
Okay.
He now lives in the UK. It'd be hard to ask him, but we'll have to get John Kelly on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I've had so many bouts of, you know, delayed onset muscle soreness from
quads,
from quads, from not doing enough downhill.
Right. But what? How did so? There's the toughness factor. I mean, there's a sleep deprivation factor. I mean, fitness. There's a fair number of people who are fit enough to finish Barkley, but very, very few are tough enough or determined enough.
Well, I think now with how difficult the course is, I mean, you always needed to be in great shape, no question about it. But now it's much harder. I wouldn't say it's much harder. It's definitely harder to get in the level of fitness to where you can finish it. So it's not,
you made the course a little longer.
Yeah, I mean, I try to keep up with it. I think it's in the neighborhood of like 3.5 to 4 hours longer, effectively, than when I last did it. So it's definitely, it's a noticeably harder course now than it was. But I mean, you definitely have to be in great, you know, phenomenal shape to complete it. But then, you know, that's just one requirement. You also have to have the mental component as well. And then of course not get lost or have any other major snafu which costs you 2 critical hours or
you said 3.5 to 4 hours longer. That's for over the whole thing, not per lap.
Right. Yeah. Over the full thing.
Yeah. Well, that adds.
Oh yeah, it adds up.
Yeah. It's 30 minutes adds up.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's amazing. Interesting. Of the methodical training, the GMT, and then after that, you went after the Colorado 14ers.
Yes. I had a lot of fun out in Colorado. Yeah, like, I mean, the Colorado 14er record, I mean, that has got to, in my opinion, I mean, I like mountaineering, and I like FKTs. And so in my mind, that is one of the best FKTs out there.
Interesting. I mean, it is...
I mean, I don't know how to describe it. I mean, it's like the ultimate FKT as far as I'm concerned.
Wow. Well, when Peter and I, we met you in Buena Vista one year.
That's right. I remember that.
And we were a little puzzled because you're from California and why pick the Colorado, because the Colorado 14ers has this logistical aspect. There's just, need, without a good crew, it doesn't work that well.
Yes, it is. It is a logistical nightmare, and even more so when you're not from Colorado and your crew is not from Colorado. And this cannot be underestimated, the logistical challenges it is. And actually, I'd almost say that it's, in hindsight, and now that several years have passed and I've got kids and they're older now, it's almost reckless to do it if your crew is not native to Colorado, or they don't know all the trailheads and roads. Wow. Because by the time you're going to get to the end of it, I mean, you're going to go 10 days plus or minus, you know, a day or so or whatever, and everyone's sleep deprived, and it just, at some point, it just becomes dangerous. Even for the crew to just drive and not like wreck, you know, the car.
Wow.
So it is a
young man's game.
Yeah. With no kids.
No kids. Well,
unless you're from Colorado, then you can do what you want.
unless you're Andrew Hamilton.
Yeah.
With multiple kids. Interesting. Because we had to think that the California 14ers, way easier logistical, because you go up there and you can run off many of them, except for White Mountain and Shasta, there's hardly any driving.
Yeah. But the reason why I've never done the California 14ers is because of Palisade Traverse.
Oh, too technical.
Yeah, it's just too technical. I'm trying to think. Thunderbolt 5.9. Yeah, 5.9 summit block. I mean, it's a boulder. It's a boulder move. But
right.
I mean, I've scouted it, and I, like, mentally, I've kind of thought to myself, okay, how many times would I really like to have a rope? And it was like a handful of times. I mean, I never was proficient with climbing enough to make myself comfortable doing that without a rope.
Interesting.
And it's hard to get the kind of proficiency in climbing without spending a lot of time doing it. And
right.
I never had the time to
right.
to do it.
You were always working.
Yeah, yeah. Or running on a treadmill to stay in shape.
Running on a treadmill at night and working during the day does not enable one to free solo 5'9". But the technique now is they tend to lasso it. They actually throw a rope up and Prusik up.
Yeah. Does that count?
That's okay. Yeah, that's.
But you lose style points.
You lose style points, but don't lose the FKT.
Okay. Well, maybe I should try it.
Well, you were extraordinarily fit, but I think issues developed around the Colorado 14ers for you.
I had numerous issues in the Colorado 14ers, health issues, but like accidents and that sort of thing. One in particular is that's the second attempt. I tried it three times. The second attempt is where I discovered that I had exercise-induced asthma. And that is why all three attempts failed, ultimately. And I now know that it impacted the JMT. It impacts pretty much anything that's more than a day, that's in a cold, especially cold and dry environment. So for something like the Barclay, ironically, I don't think it ever impacted me, at least not significantly, because it's warm. It's warm, and at least when the years I did it happened to be warm and moist enough to where it didn't limit me. But who knows? Actually, maybe it did, for all I know, because it's not obvious when it actually does start to become a limiting factor. It's unfortunately a performance limiter. I tried taking medicine for it on the third attempt, but it seemed to make no difference at all. And actually, as more time goes on, I realize it's worse than I think it is or used to think it was. Like, for example, I did Urea 100, and I thought that that's a short enough event. You know, one day, well, it's like one day and a half, but more importantly, there's only one night. And so, again, the cold and dry air is what really triggers it. And so I figured one night I would be fine. But even then, by the end of that race, I was pretty much walking on the descents. I could barely jog on the descents because the asthma was that bad.
Maybe it's gotten worse with age.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's fortunately, it's I don't trigger it that to that degree that often, just because I'm not doing multi-days that often anymore. So it's hard to really say for sure. I mean, it's hard to do these experiments.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, maybe it is getting worse with time.
Do you think you gave up time on the JMT due to exercise-induced asthma?
Yeah. Yeah, I gave up a lot of time on the last day in particular.
How much do you think?
I don't know, but it could easily be, I'd say, 6 hours.
Wow.
Because it probably wasn't just the third day. It was also, I mean, the third day was just horrendous. I mean, I was walking very slowly, even downhill at the end, because I was out of breath.
Wow.
Because I mean, think about that. Like stepping over rocks. I was avoiding rocks because just stepping on like a 3-inch rock. It was taxing, because I mean, my excess oxygen uptake was that minimal.
That's hard. That's really hard.
Yeah.
And yet you still got the FKT.
Yep.
You were fit and you were determined.
Yeah, it was determined. That's for, yeah, for that. I mean, irrationally determined, I would say, for that. Like when you think you're basically killing yourself, but you don't stop, that's when you know you're pushing it a bit far.
There's an interesting element to that, isn't there, Brett? I mean, there's a component to that, isn't there? Of people who, what you just said, in a figurative or maybe even a literal sense, pushing yourself so hard it feels like you're just killing yourself, but you don't stop, you keep going.
Yeah.
And so to win the mile, I should say the 1500 meters, it doesn't take that, even the marathon. But something like a multi-day where your body system, you're not digesting food well, your endocrine, your hormonal systems, or your sleep deprivation, that's a different level of push.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think? Is that healthy, or what do you think about that?
Well, as long as it doesn't kill you, yes, I guess it's the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a lot of things in life. I mean, it's a calculated risk. I mean, you know, do you want to live a life with minimal risk and then minimal potential reward, or not that you have to necessarily, you know, risk your life to have a fulfilling life or anything like that. But you know, it's a calculated risk to take. Hmm. So, and I'm, you know, I definitely have a higher risk tolerance than some people, and but then lower than others as well. But.
Interesting thoughts. Well, we drove out here from Colorado to California, passed through Palm Springs, did what's it called? The Cactus to Clouds.
Yep.
The Skyline Trail, San Jacinto. Super amazing. That's a wonderful hill climb.
Oh yeah.
Gosh, I mean, that's so good.
There's not that many climbs of that duration, of that gain, in the continental U.S. There's
right.
probably only a handful without a really long approach.
Yeah, this is over 8,000 feet in one straight shot.
Well, it's 8,000 feet up to the tram.
Correct.
It's over 10,000 feet up to the
summit. San Jacinto,
yeah.
Right. But there's a little flat section there.
Yeah.
So it's a little different. The character changes after the tram.
Yep.
But you still have the FKT on that.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised. I haven't been keeping up with the FKTs lately, unfortunately. I'm a bit out of the game at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know there's been attempts on it. I'm a bit surprised that no one, maybe there haven't been that many attempts on it. But yeah, it's an amazing route.
And were you going hard? How did you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, at the time when I was doing it, I was pushing myself very hard. I mean, I was to the point of, I felt like throwing up for an extended period of time. I mean, I pushed myself just so hard for so long up that, during that, I don't think I could have done it any faster, that day, that particular day when I did it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is the characteristic of a person who can push themselves that hard? Because we talk about fitness, we talk about skill, things like that. But when we get into the JMT, the Barkley, the 14ers, things like that, it's a little different, in my opinion. It's that ability just to go to the mat, take it to the max. You have that, had that. What do you think? I mean, who has this, who doesn't? Is this something that's trainable?
I don't know. I'm inclined to say that it's not really trainable. It's not necessarily intrinsic. It could be intrinsic, but then also just a byproduct of well, certainly it could also just be a byproduct of upbringing. For whatever reason, you know, people's brains get wired, you know, to really devote themselves to accomplishing some objective, you know, at all costs.
Goal oriented at all costs.
Yeah.
And you had that. And why, if I may ask? Is there any possibility of offering an explanation, or is that just how you were wired?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe there's some OCD there. Because I tend to get focused on things at times, and you know,
work is the same.
Everything's like that. I mean, I tend to get focused on whatever I'm doing, whether it's work or running up a mountain. But yeah, and there's been it's a cognitive bias that's been shown that whatever you're focusing on, you tend to exaggerate its importance, and so if you naturally just dwell on something, you're going to just inflate its importance even more. Mm-hmm. And so if something just becomes all important, it becomes all consuming. And so it kind of becomes self-fulfilling cycle in some ways.
So if you start spending all your long winter nights reading about the Colorado 14er routes, you're going to get into it.
Yep. And then also at some point you realize, okay, you sink so much time and effort into something, it's like you want it to be a success.
Uh-huh.
A quote unquote success. I mean, not that actually achieving the FKT or whatever mean success or not, but I mean, you can have multiple definitions of success, you know, just the experience, just the pursuit and that sort of thing. But
so it's self-fulfilling. Once you've invested that amount of time and energy, then you really want to accomplish a goal.
Yeah, it can definitely amplify it. I mean, I guess it's probably more applicable for like the longer FKTs. I mean, something like the Colorado 14ers, I mean, my God, it's like hundreds and thousands, maybe thousands of hours of effort to go into that. I mean, not just, you know, arranging all the logistics and the routes and all that, but then actually going out to climb all the mountains to scout all the routes and that sort of thing.
Literally thousands of hours.
I don't know. I have no idea. But it's an insane amount. If you're not in Colorado,
right,
to where you can just conveniently, you know,
right,
you know, pick off the summits.
Right. Well, it was the history, Rick and Ricky, of course. They're the people who established the modern record. Very good mountain runners, not very good logistics. The record was a little soft. Their times in the summits were very good,
mm-hmm,
but their logistics were really poor. And then we had Cave Dog, Teddy Kaiser. He reversed that. He went out there with his crew and rehearsed the whole thing and then executed.
Yep.
He sort of demonstrated the modern style of doing that.
Yep. And then Hamilton further lowered it. And then now, you know, you've got to be solid in both.
Right. You have to have excellent logistics and fitness. Yeah. Well, Andrew really was the sleep deprivation king. That's what he wasn't super fast, but he just marched up there above Timberline at night in a thunderstorm and take off four summits by himself.
That's the sort of thing, like the things that you file that in the category of things you would normally not do, but you do because it's an FKT.
Would not do, but you do. Okay. We've got to ponder that. Maybe we should offer a disclaimer to our listeners at this point. Kids, don't try this at home, or adults, don't try this out in the mountains.
Well, just like in the Ouray 100 I was doing, I mean, there was a horrendous thunderstorm in the middle of the night. I couldn't see anything. I was basically lost, and I'm like fending off hypothermia, trying to get this hole punch so I could turn back down and head down. And I'm thinking to myself, this is insane. What am I doing here?
You
should really just be trying to head back down to the mountain and give up on the race at this point. But the things you do when you're in a race that you would not otherwise do.
Hmm.
But that's part of the attraction, though. I mean, that's part of the value of it. I mean, that experience, those experiences that you open yourself up to. You know, it sets the, like the FKTs, it sets the conditions for these incredibly memorable experiences, you know, for the rest of your life. And that's one of the things that always like drew me into doing them as well.
Right. Okay. That's the balance point. Thanks for exploring the topic, Brent. You're a good person to explore it with, since you've been there, done that, and you're an intelligent person. But I will offer the disclaimer of safety first, for whatever that's worth. I think when people listening to this can, you know, have to listen to their inner guide. How about put it that way? Listen to your inner guide of what has meaning and value to you, and then make an intelligent, informed decision based on your own value system. How is that? Is that a good disclaimer?
Yeah, that'll work.
It kind of works for everything, doesn't it? It works for staying home and running your treadmill in your basement, or...
Keep things in perspective.
Keep things in perspective.
Try to.
So what's up now? I mean, obviously you got a wife, you got two kids, and you got a great job. So what are you up to now in terms of the world of recreation?
Well, I'm doing what I can to stay fit. So I am trying to do more races, you know, to get, if for no other reason, to get motivation to do more training. But really, kind of ultra running it is kind of turning into for me an experiment of what I can do on about 6 hours of training a week.
Hours of training is not a lot for ultra running.
No, it's not. But I mean, you do get the benefit of, you know, like, you know, the historical training. I mean, you can, if you've ever been in pretty good shape and you've done like the long distances,
is still there.
You can definitely leverage, you know, the history somewhat. thankfully.
Right.
But it's a different experience now. It's like when I was doing the Uray, I kind of did it as partly like on a whim. Well, you know, just to see. Well, I mean, it's an awesome course. I mean, the San Juans, I mean, you can't beat that.
Right.
That in and of itself was reason to do it for sure. But then just to see, you know, what would happen if I just tried it? You know, because again, you know, it's not necessarily better if you can do something faster and easier. Because I mean, part of the reason why I do it is for the, you know, the experience and the memories and having to suffer through something. You know, at the time it may not be pleasant, but you know, after it's over, you know, it's going to create some memory that hopefully will be worth something in the future when you look back on it.
All right. It's kind of like hatha yoga. If someone is really flexible, hatha yoga is harder for them because it's too easy. They're not getting any effect. Well, for those of us, if I can put you in the same category, we're not real flexible. Hatha yoga is right there. It's right there in front of us. It's sort of an odd paradoxical sense. It's easy to do because it's hard to do. You get an experience. Mm. Okay, work with me on that.
Yeah, well, if I did yoga, then it would take time from the treadmill, so I gotta choose my 6 hours carefully.
Okay, so a few races here and there, staying in shape.
Trying to do what I can. I mean, I always want to get in better shape and devote more time to training, but it just hasn't been happening. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to get back out there and trying to do some FKTs, if not something shorter, something longer, or it doesn't require as much, you know, peak cardio fitness.
Mm-hmm.
If you got some ideas, Buzz, I'm all ears. Preferably with at most one night, though.
One night.
Okay. I'm not good after that.
One night. Okay.
One night or less.
Well, you know, my specialty I call low-hanging fruit far out on the limb, which is things other people haven't thought of. That's my forte. Yeah. I mean, but that's how it's gone. I mean, rim to rim to rim.
Oh, yeah, it's a nice one.
Yeah, it's nice.
That's an awesome one.
But we actually are thinking, Brett, disclosing this for the first time, of starting on the Premier Routes, a top 10 list of FKTs. Because we don't want it to become this elitist aspect. We really like the every person can do this.
Mm-hmm.
Find something that's cool, that's interesting, that's meaning for you. Learn the route that no one else has learned. Go out there and do it. But it's become so popular and so well accepted all over the world that some of the more popular routes, more notable routes, are really fast now.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, this isn't going to happen. But a top 10 list on just the premier routes might be something that we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea.
Okay, then we could also have a list for people who work for a living and people who have families, but...
Can we come up with some sort of like handicap system? You know, throw in age.
Well, age, I'd be back in the game, but I don't think we're going to do that. I'm just kidding about that. Sorry about that. Well, this is terrific, but you look terrific. You know, you look very fit. You look very healthy, and that's an important thing. You're a happy guy, and that's what it's about, isn't it?
Yep. Yep. Ultimately, that is what it should be about.
Okay. Well, thank you, Brett, for spending time on the Fastest Known podcast with us. And please stay in touch, and maybe we'll get out there together sometime.
Yeah, I'd love to, Buzz. Thanks. It's been good talking with you.
Thank you.
Bye.